Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Evening Under Lamplight with Robert Louis Abrahamson here on Cambridge 105 Radio. I think there are some good things I'd like to attend to this evening under lamplight, and I invite you to attend with me. We started off last time with a raucous song from Dylan, and we'll do that again this time. A raucous song well worth attending to.
Walking.
You know that song, Dylan's Rainy Day Women, numbers 12 and 35. I've never even considered trying to make sense of what that title might mean. Often that's the best thing to do with Dylan's words, just take them in. Why numbers 12 and 35? Well, why not numbers 12 and 35? Or why Rainy Day Women, if you want to start asking questions? What caught me as I listened to the song recently was the refrain. But I would not feel so all alone, he says. Everybody must get stoned. Two parts to this. Not feeling alone, not feeling like you're the only one, and the recognition that it comes to all of us. What comes? For getting stoned. Of course, one immediately thinks of getting high, getting stoned from dope. Metaphorically, we all get stoned in one way or another to hide from that feeling of being all alone. Drugs, alcohol, Netflix, strenuous exercise, all ways we can get stoned and escape from the pains and the loneliness of life, just for a little bit. That makes sense, doesn't it? But I don't think that's what the song is about. It's not about getting stoned, but being stoned. Someone is doing it to you. Someone is stoning you. You know, that Old Testament punishment. It's another example of the way Dylan keeps bringing in biblical imagery when we'd least expect it. Being stoned was a punishment for particularly bad sins or crimes. If, for instance, you worship other gods, you should be taken out of town, where then the townspeople, the men only, should throw large stones at you until you die. Or maybe you've broken the Sabbath rules. Or if a man seduces a virgin engaged to another man, both of them should be stoned to death. The woman, because she had not cried out. Oh, so if she did cry out and no one bothered to rescue her, then what? Well, and the man, because he violated his neighbor's wife, even though they weren't quite married just yet. I think the important thing to realize is that the person to be stoned is taken outside the city gates. In other words, that person is no longer one of the group, but an outsider, a pestilence to be removed. So the pain they're inflicting on you is not just physical, but emotional and psychological too. And we know that it's only when you can consider someone as an other, as someone different from you, an outcast, a foreigner, an inferior, only then can you bring yourself to inflict pain or kill that person. In fact, then it becomes quite easy, as we know. At one point, you may remember, they prepared to stone Jesus as a blasphemer and thus a sinner, an outsider to be removed. But he somehow, and it's not clear, wriggled out of the crowd and escaped. At another time, Jesus was brought along to the scene of a stoning. There was the woman, caught in the very act of adultery. What should be done? The authorities asked Jesus, testing him to see if he would support the law and comply with the cruel killing of the woman, or be compassionate towards the woman and disobey the law. Jesus, as usual, approaches the situation from a completely unexpected direction. He bypasses the question entirely and goes to the heart of the matter. He turns to these men and asks, "Who among you is without sin?" Which is to say, who among you might also be brought out here to be stoned if we learned the deep truth about you? That woman need not feel so all alone. All the men around her might get stoned too. The men walk off in shame, and whether they walk off into changed lives or not is something we're not told. Jesus approaches the woman, whom we might picture cowering against the wall, waiting for the first stone to hit her. "Where are all these men who accused you and were going to kill you? Who is there who accuses you?" She looks around and sees they've all left. "There's no one accusing me," she answers. "Neither do I condemn thee," says Jesus. "Go and sin no more." She need not feel so all alone now, for a different reason. There is gentle forgiveness instead of getting stoned. Well, let's get back to Dylan's song, which is basically another one of his catalogue songs. Here, a catalogue of all the times they will stone you. It's one of those urban paranoia catalogues. They'll get you whatever you do, even your most innocent activities. They'll stone you when you're trying to be so good. They'll stone you just like they said they would. They'll stone you when you're trying to go home, when you're there all alone, when you're walking along the street, when you're trying to keep your seat, when you're walking on the floor, when you're walking to the door, when you're at the breakfast table, when you are young and able. Notice the shift in meter, which keeps it from feeling like Dr. Seuss. They'll stone you when you're trying to make a buck. They'll stone you and then they'll say, good luck. Yeah, what do they care? They're just out to get you. They'll stone you and say that it's the end. Then they'll stone you and then they'll come back again. They'll stone you when you're riding in your car, when you're playing your guitar, when you walk all alone, when you are walking home. They'll stone you and then say you are brave. They'll stone you when you are set down in your grave. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. But wait. If the song is all about how all of us are going to face some kind of pain or disaster or oppression, why is the song so raucous? Why do they seem to be having such a wild time performing it? Well, what else are we going to do in the face of this inevitability? But come together in a session and bounce around in some fashion or another. Or maybe, to get back to the double meaning of stoned, maybe one response is just to get stoned ourselves and just get together and lighten up a little. Light one up a little. Not solitary, like the drunkard head down at the bar, but a party. Whatever kind of party is appropriate to the particular stoning they're throwing at us. But the thing to take away, surely, is that there's going to be a point in the lives of each of us, or probably more than one point, when we feel oppressed, either because we deserve it or not. That doesn't seem to be the issue here. We're oppressed or pained or things have just gone wrong. What makes it worse is that these experiences tend to make us feel isolated, feel like an outsider, whether we really are or not. Here I am with a diagnosis of cancer, but look at everyone else going around the place feeling fine. Why am I the one who has to suffer this? I've just been landed with this huge unexpected bill for something I had no control over. All those rich people get away with it. Why do they pick on me? We feel terrible about these catastrophes and feel isolated, but there's no sense compounding the pain by feeling all alone. Everybody must get stoned. It's the human condition. Open yourself to some solidarity with the rest of us. Notice how easy it is to slip into they. They are doing this to me. I'm not sure who's responsible exactly, but I know someone is. Some group of people. They're against me. They're out to get me. They. You've turned them into some other. You've deprived them of their human identity. No wonder you now feel alone. Everyone else is an other, but, hey, I would not feel so all alone. All you have to do is let go of that vision of them as they, and see them as one of us all, another human being who must get stoned. The classic line about this, the line, at least, that I regard as classic, and I hope you might too, is from the great Samuel Johnson's poem, The Vanity of Human Wishes. Life is full of obstacles, illness, adversity, evil. But even if you have managed so far in your life to avoid all these, even then, Johnson says, yet hope not life from grief or danger free, nor think the doom of man reversed for thee. Yet hope not life from grief or danger free, nor think the doom of man reversed for thee. Don't think your life will be free from grief or danger. Don't think you're a special case and won't get stoned like everyone else in the history of the human race. Don't think the doom of man, that is the human condition of facing complications and setbacks and disappointments, not to mention even worse things. Don't think this doom has been reversed for you. Here's a little song expressing what most of us must have felt one time or another as we succumb to the feeling that we are caught up in our own painful and lonely misery. I've been lonely so long, he says, don't seem like happiness will come along. These ain't raindrops over my head. Everybody's throwing rocks in my bed. Throwing rocks in your bed? Who does that? Well, I suppose it's one way they'll stone you. And here's the point of hope for this schlemiel. Won't somebody help me, please? The backup guys chime in. And sure, that's the point. There's got to be a better way, I know, to shake this monkey off, because he's making me so... Making you so what? Well, he never finishes that thought. The monkey of lonely self-pity stifles him, alas. Well, here's Franklin Knight, and I've been lonely for so long. Not to be confused with the Rascals, I've been lonely too long, which sounds rather too upbeat for a lonely song. Frederick Knight, then.
So long, don't seem like happiness will come along. I've been lonely for so long, don't seem like happiness will come along. These ain't rain clouds over my head. Everybody's throwing rocks in my bed. Just can't see.
Somebody help me, please.
'Cause I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along. I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along.
Somebody help me, please.
'Cause I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along. I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along.
Yes, I know what it feels like to be lonely. To have your friends turn their backs on you. Yes, I've been lonely. To never know the real meaning of peace of mind. Yes.
Somebody help me, please.
'Cause I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along. I've been lonely for so long. Don't seem like happiness will come along.
The song was written by Frederick Knight's wife. What was she trying to tell him, do you think? Well, at least he has all those backup musicians and singers to help him along. And at least he's not so tied up in himself that he forgets the solution, asking others for help. Or we can shift it around. as soon as we realize that everybody must get stoned and we are one with these people, all of us in this world together, then if there's any heart in us, surely we will feel impelled then to reach out to all those stoned, depleted, worn out, worn down fellow creatures. Reach out with a helping hand. And just as we reach out our hand to a drowning person, telling them to reach out in turn to grasp our hand, so here too our reaching out takes the form of asking the lonely person to reach out in turn and grab the help we're offering, our loving embrace. I think the appropriate song to bring in here is the Four Tops' Reach Out, I'll Be There, with its heartfelt sympathy. When you feel lost and about to give up, 'cause your best just ain't good enough, and you feel the world has grown cold, and you're drifting out all on your own, and you need a hand to hold. In other words, when it feels like they've just stoned you at every step of the way, well then, reach out. I'll be there. I was looking for another version of the song, since we play so many Motown songs in Evening Under Lamplight. But no, I could find none as powerful as the Four Tops' original version, especially because of Levi Stubbs' always heart-centered vocals. Attend. I've always liked that bit at the end. Just look over your shoulder, he cries. It's not easy when you're standing right in front of someone to have that person ask for your help. But you want to be there all the same, maybe right behind them. They just have to look over their shoulder and grasp your helping hand. You have their back, as we say, just over their shoulder. I'll be there. And I'll probably be there because I know what it's like when you feel lost and about to give up. That's what connects me to you. So as our refrain this evening reminds us, I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. And if that's so, then don't we have yet one more reason to appreciate our unity with the rest of humanity? And instead of nursing our wounds feeling alone, shouldn't we reach out and help others who may be in even worse situations? After all, none of us are free if one of us is chained, as Solomon Burke sings. Wait, but before we attend to the song itself, let me rehearse the lyrics. First, because they're too important to pass over lightly. And second, because hearing them first, you'll be better able to attend meaningfully to them as sung. It's as though the words were written exactly to fit into this evening's theme. The song is called None of Us Are Free. It should be None of Us Is Free, but let that pass. Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand none of us are free if one of us are chained. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other, let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. It's a simple truth we all need just to hear and to see. None of us are free if one of us is chained. Now I swear your salvation isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We've got to join together in spirit, heart, and mind so that every soul who's suffering will know they're not alone. If you just look around you, you're going to see what I say, 'cause the world is getting smaller each passing day. Now it's time to start making changes, and it's time for us all to realize that the truth is shining bright right before our eyes. None of us are free if one of us are chained. Ray Charles first recorded the song, but there's something I feel more resonant in Solomon Burke's version, with the Blind Boys of Alabama on backup vocals. Here it is.
And brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will too. We all come to understand none of us are free. None of us are free. Darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other, let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. So that every soul there's a world that's getting smaller each passing day.
Passing day.
Now it's time to start making changes, and it's time for us all to realize that the truth is shining bright right before our eyes.
Before our eyes.
None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free.
Well, after that, it's time for a wee break. You're listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio with Robert Louis Abrahamson. We are attending to all the ripples resonating out from Dylan's lines, "But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned."
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio. When the day comes to an end, he invites you... No. When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend. It's Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio. It's Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Thank you, Neil Henry. And let's have another song before we move on to something else. What happens when your fear of being stoned turns into a madness, like an acute schizophrenia paranoia blues, as we hear from the Kinks on their most insane album, Muswell Hillbillies, with the wild, mad horns and piano?
And I've been
I got it, you got it, we can't lose. Acute schizophrenia blues. There ain't no cure for it. Everybody must get stoned. This guy, he tells us, went to his local head shrinker to help classify his disease and was told it was one of the cases of acute schizophrenia he sees. It's all very fine to have a label, but that doesn't really do you any good. Here's something that might be more helpful. As we reach out, we don't really want labels or statistics or pep talks or even words, perhaps. We want someone to take our fears and pain seriously and compassionately. And there's no one like Stephen Levine to do that. Stephen Levine knew all about this kind of pain and focused it on reaching out to the sick and dying, being there with them as a compassionate presence. Here he is, in his own words, telling us a little about depression and, what's worse, resignation.
Depression, we're so afraid of depression, and yet in it there's an incredible healing. There is a real confrontation and a real seeing I'm powerless in the face of this thing. We're all terrified of depression. I know that in a period of my life where things seemed overwhelming, there was a lot of darkness. There was that depression of nothing's going to work out. Nothing's the way I want it to be. Actually, that depression is one of the places where you are starting to open to how things are, seeing you can't control the universe. In depression, a person is so open to love. You don't try to talk a person out of depression. You just love them. You just be with them. You're just present for them. It's a heavy emotion. You don't try to rationalize it out. Everything's going to be okay. Yep, everything is going to be okay. But the hand, the contact of one human to another is more important than all the words you can say. Unless those words really come from a place in your heart where you can touch your own depression and there isn't a separateness. Depression is not a very verbal space. It's a space of deep feeling. And the presence you manifest for yourself, you'll be able to manifest for another. The depression takes you beyond the depression. The openness takes you into what has been called acceptance. In my experience, much of what has been called acceptance is actually a kind of resignation. I'm working with a fellow, came in one morning, he was in the hospital. He said, oh, I feel like I could sleep forever. Do you want to sleep forever? Do you want to die? He said, I don't want to, but I guess I'm going to. That's not acceptance, that's resignation. And that resignation is a place where a lot of us live out our lives. It's that life of quiet desperation that Thoreau talks about. It's a place in all of us where we're willing not to do the work, where we'll just cope, which means hang in there by your teeth, which somebody said they were willing to bargain that if nobody made it too bad, they wouldn't expect it to be too good. That's resignation. A resignation to life, a resignation to death. It's as long as it's a tie, okay. Not too much light, not too much darkness. Very desperate, very empty life, but a place where many of us reside often, and a place where certainly when people come to the end of their lives, particularly if they're not in a supportive environment, if they're not allowed to trust that intuitive flash that they may be receiving, that everything is going to be okay, resignation.
So there's the advice of a man wise in these things. Reach out and touch. That's much better than just words. Oh, wait, there's the fear of infection if we touch people. We're told to avoid contact. What an awful thing to have to tell people. But we're not entirely deprived of touch. We can certainly touch each other through our eyes and through our voice, as I hope I touch you a little through this radio medium. And as we spoke about on an earlier show, when we speak, we touch others not so much through the words we use as through the tone of voice, the go-between spirit passing between us. You'll have noticed the reference to Thoreau. That's Thoreau's line, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation." And if, as Levine says, we're not in a supportive environment, if we're not allowed to trust that intuitive flash that can come to tell us things will be all right, then we're headed towards that deadly resignation. And that leads us to our final little story, where resignation is overcome by connections between people. It's a story from the Holocaust, and like all such stories, it contains details that might upset you, so I warn you. The story is from a moving book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, a collection of stories by Yaffa Eliach based on first-hand recorded accounts from Holocaust survivors. They are accounts told by Hasidic rabbis or their followers, or by those who encountered Hasidim in the camps. I should explain that Hasidism is an ultra-Orthodox group within Judaism, with a strong mystical approach to the presence of God with us at all times. The Rebbe is at the center of each Hasidic community, often attributed with supernatural spiritual powers. Yaffa Eliach's book does not just give us a vivid picture of life in the concentration camps, but also captures the holiness even in the camps and the miracles attributed to the power of the Rebbe. The story I'm going to read features one of the holiest of these Hasidic rabbis, Rabbi Israel Spira, who came to America after the war and became a prominent holy man in Brooklyn, New York. The story is set in the Yanovska Road camp in the Ukraine, which became notorious for its cruelty, not just by the Nazi SS, but also the civilian collaborators. Eliach has a tendency to overdo the emotional power of the story, but the power shines through. Here's the story. It was a dark, cold night in the Yanovska Road camp. Suddenly a stentorian shout pierced the air. "You are all to evacuate the barracks immediately and report to the vacant lot. Anyone remaining inside will be shot on the spot." Pandemonium broke out in the barracks. People pushed their way to the doors while screaming the names of friends and relatives. In a panic-stricken stampede, the prisoners ran in the direction of the big open field. Exhausted, trying to catch their breath, they reached the field. In the middle were two huge pits. Suddenly, with their last drop of energy, the inmates realized where they were rushing on that cursed, dark night in Yanovska. Once more, the cold, healthy voice roared in the night. "Each of you dogs who values his miserable life and wants to cling to it must jump over one of the pits and land on the other side. Those who miss will get what they rightfully deserve. Rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat." Imitating the sound of a machine gun, the voice trailed off into the night, followed by a wild, coarse laughter. It was clear to the inmates that they would all end up in the pits. Even at the best of times, it would have been impossible to jump over them, all the more so on that cold, dark night in Yanovska. The prisoners standing at the edge of the pits were skeletons, feverish from disease and starvation, exhausted from slave labor and sleepless nights. Though the challenge that had been given them was a matter of life and death, they knew that for the SS and the Ukrainian guards, it was merely another devilish game. Among the thousands of Jews on that field in Yanovska was the rabbi of Blujov, Rabbi Israel Spira. He was standing with a friend, a free thinker from a large Polish town whom the rabbi had met in the camp. A deep friendship had developed between the two. "Spira, all of our efforts to jump over the pits are in vain. We only entertain the Germans and their collaborators. Let's sit down in the pits and wait for the bullet to end our wretched existence," said the friend to the rabbi. "My friend," said the rabbi as they were walking in the direction of the pits, "man must obey the will of God. If it was decreed from heaven that pits be dug and we be commanded to jump, pits will be dug and jump we must. And if, God forbid, we fail and fall into the pits, we will reach the world of truth a second later, after our attempt. So, my friend, we must jump." The rabbi and his friend were nearing the edge of the pits. The pits were rapidly filling up with bodies. The rabbi glanced down at his feet, the swollen feet of a 53-year-old Jew ridden with starvation and disease. He looked at his young friend, a skeleton with burning eyes. As they reached the pit, the rabbi closed his eyes and commanded in a powerful whisper, "We are jumping." When they opened their eyes, they found themselves standing on the other side of the pit. "Shpira, we are here, we are here, we are alive," the friend repeated over and over again, while warm tears streamed from his eyes. "Shpira, for your sake, I am alive. Indeed, there must be a God in heaven. Tell me, Rebbe, how did you do it?" "I was holding on to my ancestral merit. I was holding on to the coattails of my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather of blessed memory," said the rabbi, and his eyes searched the black skies above. "Tell me, my friend, how did you reach the other side of the pit?" "I was holding on to you," replied the rabbi's friend. That was Natalie Klein in the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra with Ernest Bloch's Jewish Song. Full of sorrow, but not resignation, as even in the midst of those terrible days in the camps, these two men reached out and held on. They learned that they need not feel so all alone, even there. Well, it's been a show full of sorrow this evening under lamplight here on Cambridge 105 Radio with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, but not resignation. And to show that we're still buoyant, if not also raucous, let's end as we began with Rainy Day Women number 12 and 35. And if we attend to it after all that we've been through this past hour, we just might feel the compassion that underlies this song. Yes, it does. And with that, good night. And do not feel so all alone. We're in it together.
Said they would. They stone you when you're trying to go home.
just on you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. Well, they'll stone you when you're walking on the street. They'll stone you when you're trying to keep your seat. Come back again.